example, when a vacuum cleaner 1 meter away is on, your sound pressure level increases to 70 dB. So that's 20 dB more than 50. A chainsaw 1 meter away produces a sound pressure level of 110 dB. And it turns out that the threshold of discomfort from sound intensity is 120 dB. And you've probably noticed that, you know, the siren on a on an emergency vehicle produces sounds louder than 120. They go up to 140, sometimes 150 dB, and you can hear them, you know, blocks away. Could you imagine having one of those sirens in your house going off? It would be excruciating. I don't think you'd survive. So, interestingly enough. So because each 10 dB or one bell, see, by the way, they call it deci, which is a tenth of a bell, because originally, I guess, they wanted to, you know, they called it bells. It has to do with Alexander Graham Bell, because that was his name, and they decided to use that term. So one bell represents a difference factor, or difference by a factor of 10. See, so 120 dB, which is 12 bells, represents a pressure of 10 to the 12th times greater than the reference threshold level. So that's a change of a million to a million. So we're using deci instead of just bells. Since our ears respond logarithmically to changes in sound level, which makes the decibel a very useful tool of comparison. And basically, that's what it is. You know, there are five. I'm going to skip a little bit here. There's five districts dealing with, you know, comparing. I'll go through the five. Let me let it drop. I don't know if the timer's on tonight, because I don't hear it timing out, which is good. I'm listening to myself anyway.
Hello.
All right, so the five decibels. Okay, so the decibel basically the ratio of two power values. It's confusing logarithms, so very large and small ratios result in numbers that are easy to work with. A positive decibel value indicates a ratio greater than 1, and a negative decibel value indicates a ratio of less than 1. 0 decibels indicate a ratio of exactly 1. So 0 dB is a reference point of 1. As an example, 0 dBm, okay, now this I just know by heart because I work with it. For people who don't know, 0 dBm, and m is reference to 1 milliwatt, is the actual reference value. So 0 dBm and m is your power measurement, your ratio of two powers. Is reference to 1 milliwatt, and that's a milliwatt of power. Now, because you're dealing with power, you have to know there's one unknown, and that is the impedance or the resistance that the power is measured across. It turns out that, and this is, see, again, you can calculate this if you want to do it. If you know the power formula, P equals E times I, E squared over R, or I squared R, put the power formula to use, you can calculate the actual voltage of the 1 milliwatt across a certain impedance. Because we deal with a 50 ohm system, we use that as our impedance measurement for coax cables. You know, so we can see how much power is being lost because we know our coax is 50 ohms or lateral line being 400 ohms or whatever impedance you're looking at. So if you get the gist of what I'm saying, you can actually see the voltage that would be calculated across that impedance. All right, let me let it drop for any questions up to this point. Okay, very good. And you're listening to Andy's Corner. So I just explained basically dBm values, and that's the five decibel basics. The letter following dB, which is dBm, indicates a specific reference value, and there's a table here which gives you different values of a dB, and you can have dBm, dBw, dBv, dB microvolts, UV, dBi. And dBi is as reference to isotropic, which is basically a reference antenna, because when you're talking about antennas, you want to reference a dipole to isotropic. A dipole technically in free space gives about a 2.1 dB gain over an isotropic. An isotropic basically is a artificial antenna. It's not real, and it radiates in all directions equally. Or a dipole giving that figure eight pattern does give gain, approximately 2.1 dB. And again, in free space. So, and that's also calculated and, proven. So that's measured in dB. So there you go. There you go. Got the dB for the antennas. Now, also given in dB, you have gains and losses of series of stages in a ratio of communication systems. And that could be added together. So if you have, for instance, you have an amplifier that gives you 10 dB gain, that'll give you 10 times the power. So you put in 1 watt, if it has a 10 dB gain, you're going to get out 10 watts. So if you have an amplifier in your line, and what the power going in is, and you know what the power going out is, then you plug it into your dB formula, which is 10 times the log, because it's a logarithmic value of P2, your output over your input, P2 over P1. That's your basic dB formula for power. Turns out that it's 20 times the log for voltage, because we can measure dB in volts, so we can measure dB in actual power. All right, let me let it drop. By the way, I'm not reading word by word. I'm talking from the article, and I'm also talking from experience of what I know and what I remember and what I've forgotten. So losses and attenuation are equivalent to negative values of gain. And you're going to ask, what is a negative value? How can you have a negative gain? Well, a negative gain is a loss. So you can have losses in coax cable. You got 100 feet of cable. You put in a certain amount of power at one end. How much power are you going to get out the other end? Well, again, it's calculatable, and it's also specified. The manufacturer specifications, mention what your losses are per foot or per 100 feet or per 1,000 feet or, what have you. So you can figure out, what cable would be best suited to your needs, whether it be coax or lateral line or what have you. So losses and attenuation are equivalent to negative values of gain. In other words, a loss of 3 dB is equivalent to a gain of minus 3 dB. So you actually have a gain, but it's a negative gain, minus 3 dB. And 10 dB of attenuation is equivalent to a gain of minus 10 dB. That's a little bit confusing to understand, but that's the way they explain it. So, all right. So I jumped ahead a little bit here. I got to watch my time because I do have to go to work tomorrow, and I got to wrap this up. There's a few more pages. Let me just let it drop a second. All right. So there's a few more things here that I did not mention. So that's, ratio and electronic circuits also deal with signal levels that change by many orders of magnitude. Thus, the decibel is a common feature of the tentacle side of the amateur radio. Or I should say tentacle side of amateur radio. For example, received signal strengths, and this is the part that I didn't discuss last time, is that your S meter on your radio. Most of the radios now don't even have mechanical S meters. They have digital S meters, which is a bar graph, and it gives you, approximation. It's not really, I don't know how accurate they are. There have been tests made in the ARRL lab over in Connecticut to prove which radios really have an S meter that corresponds to the right value. It turns out for people who didn't know that there's a certain, you know, microvolt reading that the S-meter gives, and it became a standard that an S9 reading on your S-meter corresponds to 50 microvolts. So 50 microvolts of voltage will give you supposedly an S9 reading. It turns out there's a dB. Now, here's where you got to use a chart. You could calculate it, but you need to do some visualization on the air if you don't have a pen and paper in front of you. It turns out that there is a dBm to microvolt conversion chart, which I have in front of me, and that's for a 50-ohm system. Again, you got to keep the impedances correct using 50-ohms. Using a 50-ohm system. So a 50-microvolt signal, which will give you an S9 reading, corresponds to minus 73 dBm. So technically, if you want to check, you could use that as a reference. You want to check a radio to see if your S-meter is really on target. If you have an accurate signal generator that puts out, you know, your signal in microvolts or in dBm, you could just, dial up your minus 73 dBm or 50 microvolts on your dial, your calibration dial on your signal generator, and guess what? If your radio is properly adjusted and your S-meter is accurate, you should see about an S9 signal. And I've done some of these tests, and you'd be amazed how some radios are accurate and some are just not at all. No calibration whatsoever. So there's something to keep in mind. Alright,
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
I did pretty good up to this point. Let me just let it drop. Okay, this is Andy's Corner, WHCDL. Any questions on the S-meter? Because that's a very good thing to know if you really want to know how much signal is coming into your radio. And that's just one test. Any questions? WHCDL. Andy. I think that's Roy. Yes, Roy.
Yes, is that correct that the UHF and VHF radios are calibrated to 5 microvolts at S9?
Okay, where did you hear that information? I'm just curious.
Well, it's all over the internet. Matter of fact, I have a link to the whole subject of decibels and S-meters on Roy's link.
So did you say, you said 5 microvolts?
Yes, it's my understanding that the 50 microvolts are for HF radios, and for some odd reason, someone decided to set S9 on a radio that's set for UHF and VHF at 5 microvolts.
WB2EAV.
Okay, and by the way, according to my chart, 5 microvolts is about minus 93 dBm, by the way, minus 93. I'm not familiar with that, actually, which is interesting. I'm not. I always went by the S9 or the 50 microvolt rule. Ed, what do you have to add?
I don't know this, but I think I may know where this is coming from. At HF, your noise floor is atmospheric. At VHF and UHF, it's Gaussian noise, which is much lower. So I would assume if you're dealing with a lower noise floor, you can stretch things a little, whereas at HF, you're buried in atmospheric noise, and that's the driver. Back then.
Yeah, I'm not aware of this. I'm not familiarized with this. But you know what? I'll do some research and see. But I agree with what you're saying, yes. Atmospheric noise as opposed to Gaussian noise on UHF, on microwave frequencies, yes, it's true. So there's a correction factor for that, is what you're saying. But I haven't really read this, and I'll do some research on it. Good information, thanks. Roy, back to you. Ready comments?
No, I just wanted to point out it's rather confusing. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, a lot of analog-based radios these days have their S-meters hooked up to the AG circuit. So when you change the gain, you change the S-meter results, which doesn't mean it's a standard. Thankfully, with the onset of software-defined radios, they're designed in such a way that you can actually directly measure their microvolt signals. So usually a software-defined radio is not gimmicked, and so you can, if they're calibrated correctly, you can somewhat more rely on them than the old analogs that are running on the AGC circuit.
Yeah, that's true. Now, interestingly enough, in this particular QST magazine, which I didn't go into, there's the next article, the very next article was written by Rohde, Ehrlich Rohde, N1UL. And of course, you know, his articles are very technical. He gets really into it. And he's got a little blurb here, S-meters and accuracy, which I read, but the way that he describes this, it's a little bit hard to understand. He talks on a higher mathematical level. And I didn't want to convey this information because you have to really visualize. If you don't have the article in front of you, it's in January 2020 of QST. You could read that. He actually, the article has to do with comparing mobile and portable antennas on a 20-meter band, but he's using a radio that was designed by his company that has an S meter, which is accurate, and because you know, he wanted to make some special test conditions that he talks about, you know, that. So I jumped over to that article just to mention it at this point. Okay, that's yeah, interesting concept on atmospheric noise and AGC. By the way, and he does talk about, you know, the AGC circuit that he uses in his radios, his designs, temperature compensated, and he goes into the mathematics of the temperature. You know, it gets a little bit involved, and I'm not going to go there because it gets a little bit too deep. With his article. All right, any questions up to this point? W-A-T-C-D-O. Is that Gordon? Just answer yes or no.
Yes.
Okay, the reason why I said that, your signal is very marginal, okay? Keep it short because I don't know if you're going to hold the repeater. I can just about hear you.
Okay, my question is, you know, given that it's roughly 6 dB per S unit, what is zero? Is it the minimum comparable signal? And if so, what is that level of S zero? It's not the minimum discernible signal, and for that matter, what is the minimum discernible signal? In most amateur radios, it's about -138 dBm. So I'm just curious as to, you know, what S zero is, and how does that compare to minimum discernible signal? Over.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, and that is spoken about at the ARRL lab, you know, when they make tests. You know, minimum discernible signal is one of the tests that they make on various pieces of equipment. There is no actual number that I could give you. I just can't say it's this number or that number because every receiver is different. So what they do is they put a signal in and they want to see, okay, what is that minimum signal that they can decipher, you know, above the noise level. So there is no, as far as I know, there's no actual standard that they use, if that's what you're asking. Again, your signal is quite noisy. It's very marginal where you are. There's no direct number. So what other than the test that they make to determine what is that number, and then they figure it out from you know, from the tests that they make in the lab. It's one of the tests that you'll probably see in QST as far as minimum minimum discernible signal. It has to do with the noise floor of the radio and other factors, the way the radio is designed, as one of the tests they make. So basically, that's the way I can answer that question, Gordon. Back to you, and keep it short.
Yeah, so the difference between S0 and the minimum discernible signal is the puzzle. I'm generally happy with the 2.7 kilohertz signal, you know, bandwidth. If I can discern a signal at minus 138 dBm with that bandwidth, I'm pretty happy. And, you know, from there you can calculate noise figures and all sorts of other fun things. But, you know, that's what I do. Over.
Yeah, if you could hear a signal that's low down in the noise level, or minus 130, that's a good receiver. But if you notice, again, you know, what they do is, you know, in the lab, they make various tests. And one of the tests is with the... Most radios that you buy now have a preamp built in. Most of the HF radios I know. The ICOM 7300, which I was just playing with, has a two-stage preamp. So you put on preamp 1, you put on preamp 2, and it'll just increase your gain. But it'll also increase your noise, because the preamp will obviously do that. It increases noise. But you want to keep that ratio wide if you can. You want to keep your noise floor down and increase your gain. So what they do in the lab, as far as what I've seen, looking at the test results in QST, is they check it. They check the signal level with the preamp, with all preamps off, then they check it with the preamp 1 on, then they check it again with the preamp 2 on, and they write down those numbers of what they see. So if you're getting that far down and you're hearing a good signal coming out of the noise floor down at minus 130 or something, you got a pretty hot receiver. That's pretty good. I would agree to that. By the way, Dick has mentioned this, and it's kind of interesting. Let me just let it drop, because we're talking about decibels anyway. Let me let it drop. Ed would appreciate this. It's amazing how the GPS signal that you are receiving from the satellites, which is, what, 12 miles up in the air, 12 miles high, the signal that your receiver receives is actually lower than the noise floor of the receiver itself. And Dick once had a discussion about that, and he said it's kind of interesting how it actually can discriminate that signal from noise through the receiver's own noise, and it's done with very good filtering and very narrow bandwidth, because as you know, that's, we're getting into other tests now at the ARRL lab, because what they do is they put filters in, and you mentioned that. They want to make sensitivity measurements with various filters in line, you know, in the radio. Your GPS receiver has a very precise digital filter, because it's a digital signal and very narrow filter, so it looks really down into the noise. It looks for that signal down below the noise of the receiver and actually can pull it out. Kind of amazing how it does that, but that could be another discussion. All right, very good. Ed, since you're listening, do you have any more questions? I was just curious if you had something.
Yeah, here's one or two quick comments. You said that the satellites are 12 miles high. That's 60,000 feet. No, they're a lot higher than that. Military planes fly at 60,000 feet. You don't want to hit a GPS satellite. And besides, the air resistance would be a killer. I think they're up about 100 miles, but I really don't know. All right. Second item. If we're getting into discussions of noise floors and the like, the Gaussian noise floor is very well defined as minus 114 dBm per megahertz. So if you have a 1 kilohertz wide bandwidth, it becomes 144 dBm. is your absolute noise floor with a 1 kilohertz wide bandwidth. The trick with GPS is something called correlation. The more you know about your input signal allows you to do some processing to narrow the bandwidth down. And the way GPS picks out those really, really down-in-the-mud signals is they use spread spectrum as a coding scheme, and they allows them to do correlation. And what they're really looking for is to get the exact frequency match perfect and narrow the filter way down. The problem with using a narrow analog filter, if it isn't absolutely perfect, you hear nothing. And the idea is it follows it, and it zeroes in on it so you can get really, really down into the mud. Back to Andy, WB2EAB.
Okay, WB2CDL, very good. I think I mentioned it. It uses a correlation, and it's a digital filter. It's not an analog filter. That's how it's able to do that. Okay. Something else that. All right. Let me continue here because it is 9:30, and I just basically scratched the surface on this article here, and it looks like I'm going to have to continue it next time. There's a way, you see, without getting into all the math, there's a way of calculating decibels, and I'll just mention it, without getting too deep into that, you see, the log of a number, and we're talking about logarithms now, and not many people know what a logarithm is, and how it came about. The log of a number, or is short for logarithm, and is the answer to the question, to what value does the logarithm's base value need to be raised in order to equal the number in question? Of course, that's confusing just to listen to. And it's doing that when calculating decibels. There are two different logarithms. There's a common log, there's a natural log, and we use the common log, which is base 10. The natural logarithm written in this use that has a base. The natural logarithm is written as a number, and they're giving us that as a natural log, but we don't use that. We use a common log. And I know I just confused people just by saying what I said. So, for example, and this is the more important part, for example, if the number in question is 100, the base value of 100 is 10, because, 10 squared, and this, the square is the actual logarithm of that number. It's the number 2. So the base value 10 would have to be raised to the power of 2 to equal 100. In other words, 10 squared equals 100. Thus, the common logarithm of 100 is 2. And that's easy to remember. Similarly, the log of 1,000 would be 3, because it would be 10 times 10 times 10. And the log of 10,000 will be 10 times 10 times 10 times 10, and so on. So,
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Yeah, I just got it. Okay, station with a question, WA2CDO. I thought I heard someone. Okay. So, the log of 1/10, so now you're going to get into a fraction, less than 1, is the same as log of 10 to the minus 1. Which equals minus 1. So, alright. As I said, I don't want to go into the math because you have to visualize what I'm talking about. Basically, for dB, you have dB formula. The measuring dB is 10 times the log of your power divided by your reference power. And for voltage, it's 20 times the log of your voltage divided by the reference voltage. And it's the same thing for current. It's the current and voltage are the same. It's 20 times the log. All right, now, just you can very easily add decibels together. I don't think I went into this discussion last time. It's very easy. Another useful characteristic of decibels is that gains and losses of stages in a radio system can be added together if they are specified in decibels. For example, if you have an antenna with an 8 dB of gain, 8 dB of gain connected to a preamp, and I'm going to say this one more time. If you have an antenna with, let's say, 8 dB of gain connected to a preamp with 15 dB of gain, the total gain is simply 8 plus 15, which is 23 dB. Similarly, if a power amplifier with 12 dB of gain is connected to a feed line with 1 dB of loss, so now you got a loss to contend with. And then you're going to add it to an antenna with a 4 dB of gain. The total gain of that combination is 12 minus 1 plus 4, which is 15 dB. So again, as I said earlier, losses are treated as negative gains. So again, you know, if you want to look at that whole picture, you know, you could take your amplifier gain, put it into your feed line loss. Now you're losing some power, putting into your antenna, which has gain. Now you're gaining some power. The whole process is additive, algebraically, because you got a plus or minus voltage or dB factor to add. So, any questions on that so far? WA2CDO.
Just a comment, W2TGT.
Your signal's a lot better now, Gordon. You're much stronger.
Yeah, I'm not on River Road in Lindhurst anymore. So yeah, that makes a huge improvement. Now I'm on Route 20 in Batterson. Okay. So the thing to remember, and you were touching on it, is that that basically gain and loss can be calculated now by a second or third grader, and ignoring how we do it, you know, where it comes from, the simple act of adding and subtracting decibels, you know, as gain and loss elements, you know, makes things really, really simple. And by the way, applies to you started with acoustics at the beginning of this, but also works well with optical things too. So, you know, if you're looking at optical systems, whether they're closed systems like fiber or open systems like free space optical transceivers, you know, all of that still applies. And you know, gosh, it makes it so simple. So, just you know, ignoring all the basis of natural logs versus common logs and all this nonsense, all the arithmetic derivations of that. It's a way to express power in a way that allows you to add and subtract. Power becomes an additive and subtractive exercise, and it's very simple at that point. As I said, second and third graders can do it. Back to that W2TGT. Good talk.
Okay, Gordon, very good, thank you. Yep. Yeah, actually, I said that, what you just said, I said it because it was in the beginning of this article. The reason why we use decibels, it makes it easier to figure this out, to add and subtract. It's getting a little bit late to me right now, but I just want to touch on one thing, and then I'll have to continue this next week, but I should be back next week, even though I missed a couple of weeks. I'm sure Roy will understand that. there's a little discussion on decibels and power examples. Everyone has probably heard, how much power is, let's say, 3 dB. 3 dB is actually used in many areas, as you just mentioned, Gordon, and one of them is, you know, 3 dB half power point, and that's what they call it, the half power point. When you look at it at a curve of a, you know, of a signal or stage gain or what have you, let's say even on a spectrum analyzer, you can figure out, you go 3 dB down, and you can measure your half power point, what that is. Basically, the reason why I'm mentioning this is, here's an example, and again, you got to use some visualization. Let's suppose you have an amateur transmitter that has an output power of 10 watts, but you would like a little more power to contact a distant station. See, now there's an illustration of this, which of course I can't describe too much. It's illustrated in figure 1. After adjusting your transmitter, you measure the output power again, and you find that it's now generating 20 watts. Now, how many dB increase did you just go through? You just doubled your power. So, here's the actual steps and how they get that. The actual answer is 3 dB. You changed your power by 3 decibels, but you doubled your actual power, but in dB, you changed it by 3 dB. And again, use the 10-watt signal as the reference. Divide 20 by 10, because you increased it by 10, so you have 20, to find the power ratio of 20 divided by 10. The power ratio is 2. Again, now, what's the logarithmic value of 2? That's the question. It turns out the logarithmic value of 2 is 0.3. That's decimal 0.3. Multiply that result by 10, because in the formula, it's 10 times the log of...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
All right, I'm back, W-H-C-D-O. Okay, only 3 times for a timeout so far. I'm doing better. as I said, multiply this result by 10 equals 10 times 0.3, which is 3 dB. So basically, you take the logarithmic value of your ratio, multiply that by 10, and you'll figure out what it is. And it turns out, you know, these numbers are pretty straightforward, because you've heard of, in fact, it was mentioned earlier, I think Gordon mentioned, I didn't get into the S meters that in that depth. There was 6 decibels per S unit, and that's actually a voltage measurement. It's not a power measurement, because the S meter will read a voltage level into your receiver. So if you use the 20 times the log, you can actually figure out what voltage ratio it would be for 6 dB. That would be half your voltage. Or twice your voltage, depending on, again, if you're going 6 dB gain or 6 dB loss. So that's half your voltage. For power, it's 3 dB. For increasing your power by 3 dB or decreasing your power by 3 dB. And increasing your power will take 10 watts to 20 watts. Decreasing your power will take 10 watts to 5 watts, half the power. So that's basically how that works. All right, so your adjustments increase the power of your signal by 3 dB. When power is doubled, there was a 3 dB increase. This is true no matter what the actual power levels are. For example, increasing power from 50 to 100 watts is a ratio of 2 and is a 3 dB increase. So it holds true no matter what. If the ratio is the same, It'll hold true as far as 3 dB is concerned. So, there's another number of steps here for continuing this discussion, but unfortunately I'm running out of time, so I'm going to have to continue this. And we will continue this next week. Let me just let it drop. If there's any further questions, and we can continue this discussion, because it gets a little bit more involved.
Quick memory trick for everybody. W2TDT.
Hope I didn't put that many people to sleep. I probably did. Go ahead, Gordon. It's all yours.
Okay. So, this four numbers to plant in your brain, or four pairs of numbers. 3 is double, 3 dB is double, 6 dB is times 4, 8 times is 9 dB, and 10 times is 10 dB. Just keep those numbers in mind. You know, double is 3 dB, you know, 4 times is 6 dB, 8 times is 9 dB, and 10 times is 10 dB. Keep those in your head, and you'll be able to calculate back and forth between power and dB in a heartbeat. W2TDJ.
WB2EAD, quick question.
Okay, Ed, over to you, the WA2CDO.
Doubling it is 3 dB. 6 dB is quadrupling it. So the doubling in to 8 to 1, isn't that 9 dB? I'm not 100% sure, but I'm fairly confident.
That's exactly what I just said.
Okay, you just misspoke. You said 8. Yeah, you meant 9. Okay.
Yeah, 8 times is 9 dB.
Well, maybe I heard you wrong. Never mind. Sorry.
I think I said it both ways is the problem. Anyway, not a worry. No offense taken. But yes, exactly. You know, keep these numbers in mind. 2, 4, 8, 10 corresponds to 3, 6, 9, 10.
Yes, and if you work with this all the time, it just gets impounded in your head, and you just don't, you know, you don't forget it. You know, like to me, some decimal numbers I just know, you know, just by working with it, you know, over many years. And another thing that I just want to mention, you know, you mentioned optics. You know, dB is decibels related to a lot of different things, including phone lines. We spoke about that last time. Your phone line going to your house, your optical line going to your house is measured in dBs as well, and has losses and gains and so on. And it's done, the calculations basically in reference to decibels are all the same. So it's the only thing you have to keep in mind is the impedance values. You know, it's a little bit complicated to try to understand, you know, what the losses are in fiber optics, because what's the impedance? As we reference it to a 50 ohm system that we know, you know, fiber optic is different, and so is a phone line, because a phone line, you probably know this, has a 600 ohm impedance, and that's a standard. So now you're referencing your dB loss and gain to 600 ohms, and it turns out, again from these calculations, on a 50 ohm system. On a 50 ohm system, 1 milliwatt, DBM is 1 milliwatt, but on a 50 ohm system that corresponds to 224.224 volts, that's 224 millivolts. And on a 600 ohm system, the voltage is higher, it's 0.775 approximately. So it's like 775 millivolts as a 0 dBm reference. I know it's confusing the way I'm explaining it, but that's the guide that we use, and that's the reference point that we, if we work with this stuff all the time, we just get to know it. All right, I confuse enough people and went over everybody's head, so I'll end this discussion at this point because I have to get ready for tomorrow. And Roy, thank you again, and we will continue next week, okay? If we get some, you know, time, we can start a little bit earlier, and we can do this. Let me give it back to you, Roy, for any more comments from you. AC2GS, WA2CDL. Go ahead.
NY2H.
Yeah, hello.
Okay, thank you. Andy, before you go, if we could just take a quick walk up the S meter, see if I have this right. So an S1 signal is some reference to microvolts, let's say, and I think you said before that S9, if it's HF, it may be 50 microvolts, I think, and if it's VHF, UHF, it might be 5. Each jump of an S unit represents a doubling of the voltage, if I'm correct. 6 dB difference because you're working with voltage. Now, you go up to S9 and you come to that reference that we just spoke of. Then they gauge the meter in like 10 dB over, 20 dB over, 30 dB over S9. I suppose because S9 is a reference now and they're going using that as the new reference. So that 10 dB over S9 would not be a tenfold because it's not power, it's voltage, so it'd probably be a fivefold increase in voltage. Do I kind of have all this correct?
Andy, if you want to go, I can take this one. Your call.
Well, I was going to save this for next week. This would be next week's discussion because I wanted to get into S meters a little bit. But the Lou's on, Lou actually jumped ahead a little bit, and that's what I was saving this. And this is actually not part of this article directly, but indirectly. And yes, so I mean, Ed, if you want to run with it, okay. But I want to save it for next week and continue the discussion. You know, that's okay.
Yeah, well, I just want to know if that was right or not right, so I can go to bed.
Andy, I know what you're doing tomorrow. You're getting up like it's dawn. Go to bed. Lou, yeah, you're absolutely right about S9. S9 is defined as a signal that anything stronger doesn't buy you anything. This plus 10, plus 20, plus 30 dB stop over S9 has, at its inception and to this day, ego and nothing more.
Sorry, then, to put the ribbons on it, plus 10 dB over S9 represents a fivefold increase in voltage.
No, 10 dB is 10 to 1. It's 10 to 1 in power. But if you're talking about received signals, you're really talking power, not voltage. So 10 dB over S9 is 10 times the power. And like I said, it's overkill. You have a rock crusher signal at S9. Anything more is just a matter of ego. And I believe 30 dB over S9 would probably lift your receiver up off the table. I think it's more hyperbole than fact.
WA2VDH with a comment.
All right, then all the stations recognized. All right, I heard it differently. I heard that we're dealing with the voltages now, not power. But I guess we'll have to clear that up. Let me turn it to net control, and he'll pick up the new station. Go ahead, Roy.
I just think in power, not voltage.
Let me officially sign out, guys, because I do have to go.
Okay, Andy, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and if you need to start early, let me know, and I'll clear a runway for you. I appreciate what you do for the technical net. I appreciate you in general. So have a good night's sleep, and don't work too hard. Be safe.
Yeah, I like to go out officially. Thank you. We'll be back next week. We'll continue this discussion on S meters because, as Lou pointed out, there's a lot of controversy. But it is, just to clear up, it's a measure of voltage, not power. You're not measuring power. It's a voltage measurement. I know that Ed likes to work in power, but it is voltage. Okay, we'll talk about how S meters are calibrated and why they actually calibrate them the way they do, because there is a discussion on that. But again, next week. 73, have a good week. Roy, back to you. It's all yours. WA2CDO.
Okay, once again, thank you very much, Andy. And to Lou, if you're really curious, S9 plus 10 dB is about 160 microvolts.
Yeah, what I want to know is, I jumped from S9 to 10 dB, since we're in voltage. You know, in power, 10 dB, as Ed said, is a tenfold increase. In voltage, it would be half of that, right? It'd be a fivefold increase, is that correct?
It's the square root of 10, or about 3.
Yeah, it's about 3. It's the square root of 10.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you very much, everybody concerned. NY2H, we clear back to net.
Okay, very good. And thank you, Lou, and thank you, Ed. And for people listening, the GPS satellites, I think, are about 12,550 miles above Earth. John, WA2VDH, I think you wanted to say something?
Oh, you already mentioned it. I was just going to say that it's the square root of 10, 3.16 times the volt is when you go up 10 dB over S9. But you mentioned it already. Good.
W2HO.
Yes, Howard.
Well, I have a tech question. Over.
Okay, Andy's corner is over. Once again, I thank him very much and look forward to next week's installment. But what question would you like to ask, Howard?
Okay, good evening to everybody on the net. I've had an antenna problem. I have a G5RV antenna. And I've had the same problem over a period of time, which is using an amplifier. I noticed that when I use the amplifier, I get, what happened recently is... I noticed half of my half of the twin lead or the lateral line was disconnected. So on inspection, I noticed that it was totally heated up. I had removed about 2 feet or 3 feet of wire from the overall length of the antenna because of it was frayed, and it did get hot at one time, and I took that. Length off of the antenna, never replaced it, but I'm thinking of replacing it now. I replaced the twin lead today with longer twin lead. The twin lead is supposed to be, or lateral line is supposed to be, I think 32 or 34 feet in length. I have more length now. I got about 40 feet. It's floating up. I wonder if the increase in length would reduce the heat that I'm getting on the lateral line. And I'm using a 4-to-1 balance. I know what's called for is 1-to-1, but I that's what I had, and it's resonating. Well, this is the problem. Is it that I took 3 or 4 feet out of the overall length of the wire part? If I put that length of wire back, would that decrease the heat coming from the twin lead, the lateral line? Would that reduce the heat on that? That's my question. W2HO, back to you, Roy.
What's the SWR?
Well, I'm using a tuner, so I get the SWR to about 1-to-1 all the time.
Can I take this, Roy?
Yeah, sure, Ed.
You really should try to measure the SWR without the tuner. If you say, how do I do that? They're connected. Get a dummy load, set the tuner for a 1-to-1 SWR, and just change the antenna and read the SWR. I think your SWR, by all of these changes in length, has gone off to Never Never Land. And what you're doing is you're just pumping power into high current or high voltage spots.
Okay, but why is the SWR without the tuner very high, if that's the case?
The length of antennas is critical to the SWR. I've never actually used the G5RV, but I believe there is a section of feed line where the length is critical. Over to Roy to confirm.
Yes, indeed. G5RVs are complicated as the get-go. They're multimodal. Different bits and pieces of them operate as different radiators and power transmission lines, depending upon what band. And it's very important that you maintain the dimension. If you don't, you end up with a less resonant antenna. You can correct it with a nice antenna tuner, but you have to understand that those corrections are only as far as your antenna tuner to your transmitter. The rest of the transmission line is seeing these terrible VISWAs with the high voltage nodes, and that's probably where you're getting arcing and burning.
High current nodes will also cause overheating.
Okay, agreed. Both will cause you damage.
Okay, so I'll adjust those lengths and see that they are within specs, and hopefully that'll correct the problem. Thanks very much, W2HO. Back to you there, Roy. Thank you, Ed.
You're welcome, Howard, and thank you, Ed, as always. I was never a big fan of G5RVs. It was incredibly popular about 10 years ago, and I always tell the story, I hope not too many people heard it too many times from me, that G5RV, who was an amateur radio operator in Great Britain, passed away about 5 years ago, I think, something like that, and he had an antenna farm, because this guy was always puttering around with antenna design. He had designed the famous G5RV back, I think, in the 50s. They went to his antenna farm, they looked all over, they found a lot of interesting pieces of wire. They could not find a single G5RV antenna in his entire antenna farm. So either he had decided that he had played with it enough, or he himself had tired of it. But, you know, people swear by G5RVs, people swear at G5RVs. Because of its multimodal method, it's very important where everything gets positioned. If it's in the wrong location, the wrong elevation, next to the wrong object, it can be terrible, but if it's in the right place at the right time, it's a wonderful antenna.
Hey, Roger, that's very funny about what you said about that he didn't have a G5RV. That's a good one. Yeah, thanks for the info on that, Roy. And your input, Ed, also. Yeah, it's a great antenna. I've had very good, I've been using it for a number of years. But it's great for all the bands, but of course I'm sure that there are better antennas that perform better, like a regular dipole. It's interesting to experiment with all different antennas. So thank you very much, Roy. I appreciate the input. Back to you, W2HO.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
Wondering why he thinks that joint burned up on him. You know, how many watts did he put through? Was he putting a full gallon through, or is it a 100-watt system? What was going through?
Yeah, Paul, I believe. Incidentally, thanks for your spaceship. It was very interesting. Yeah, full gallon, and that's, I guess, when the thing presented problems and was more critical. Over.
Oh, okay, so that's understandable. Yeah, I got the G5RV Junior, the shortened version, but I never had that kind of a problem. I only do 100 watts. So, you know, I have had the connection right near the lateral line part of it, you know, because of the movement of the trees back and forth. It's steel, but, you know, it's copper clad wire, so it's steel with copper coating. So eventually it's steel, or, you know, would break if it keeps moving back and forth. That's the problem I had. You know, it sounds like you got a different problem with the 1,000 watts. Okay, yeah, and the name here is Paul. Back to you, Roy, WS2N.
WB2EAD.
Yes, Ed.
A comment to, I think that was Lou. If you're running a kilowatt, I don't care what your antenna is using, it better be a rock-solid design and rock-solid construction, or you're going to be very unhappy. That's just my own bias, prejudice, and opinion, nothing more. Roy, I have a question for the net. Are you ready?
82, I'm on.
Yes, I'm ready.
Wait, there's somebody else there?
KD2MI, do you have a comment?
Roger, good evening. Name is John, Katie to Amine. Yeah, the person mentioned that he had a 4-to-1 balun on that G5RV. The G5RV does not require a 4-to-1 balun.